everybody. Welcome to The Librarian is In, the New York Public Library's podcast about books, culture, and what to read next. I'm Frances Bartholomew XVII.
And I'm Gwendolyn Glazer, the Empress of Outer Space.
Yes, that's awesome. And we have an official announcement to make.
Yeah, we are going to try and go weekly.
Woo!
Those of you who listen to us regularly, we're usually produce one every 2 weeks, and now we're gonna put a podcast out every week. And the way the format we're gonna try, which we'd love to hear feedback on, is 1 week's gonna be just Gwen and me talking about books and things, and the other week will be a guest. So there won't be a guest every week. So that's the format. 1 week, Gwen and me, and the next week, a guest with Gwen and me, and then the following, Gwen and me alone, and then following week, a guest. So please let us know what you think,
yeah.
And we will do whatever you tell us to do.
Right, because this is partly sort of due to popular demand, where people were asking for it to be weekly, and we also are going to make them a little bit shorter as well, which I think is kind of cool, but if it is not working, we certainly want popular demand to tell us that as well.
Our goal is to, like, basically give you a 30-minute block on a treadmill, and when we're done, you know you're done.
Right, your cardio for the day
right.
is over. Congratulations.
Because podcasts are listened to everywhere, like,
yeah.
working out and stuff like that, so you can time a clock by us.
While you're doing the dishes. God, I hope you don't have 30 minutes of dishes to do
every
night.
I used to, actually, when I cleaned the house, I would put a CD at one point on, and I knew it was about an hour, and when the CD was over, I stopped cleaning regardless, like... It's over. If I have that dust ball to get, it's not happening.
Yeah.
It's still going to stay
there. This whole school of thought that if you like spend 5 minutes a night cleaning, that it never builds up to the point where you have to spend a whole giant block of it. Although I've never tried it. Does it work? The producer? Oh, the producer says it works.
Yeah, like the producer cleans, please.
I clean.
Okay.
We were talking about our format.
Oh, cleaning an hour.
Yes.
Where our goal is to be at set o'clock by
right.
us.
Right. So we're not going to make you 5 minute long podcasts. Sorry about that. Although that would be really helpful. There's a new NPR podcast that comes out in the morning that's just like 10 minutes. If you listen to this, I know somebody who works on it. And it's really good. I really like it. What is it called? The Upfront?
Up first.
That, you know, are you ready to segue?
Yes.
Because in a way that reminds me of like back in the day that from what I've read, like in the 40s and 50s when TV was new, there were actually like 10-minute TV programs and 15-minute TV programs. And then I also realized that
really?
There's also like the Today Show is like 3 hours long, but they have like, you know, 5-minute segments.
Uh-huh.
So it's like not the newest concept, but that made me think about the book I read, which, you know, is a theme I've talked about a lot, about technology and what that means. And we talk about that a lot here. So like to say, you know, when you said 5 minute podcast, you're like, ooh, something new. And then I realized, well, there's precedence for it. And I always want to, you know, I'm not as savvy historically as I wish I could be to know like the precedents for certain things
mm-hmm.
and to know the impact that things have had 50 years ago on culture that we think are new now, that something's having an impact on us. It's really complicated and interesting. And I find it very interesting. The book I read is a book of stories, which don't get enough love sometimes, called Children of the New World by mm-hmm. Alexander Weinstein.
Mm.
It's his first book. It's an original paperback by Picador, the publisher. I don't know why I said that, but I did. And Children of the New World by Alexander Weinstein is about that. It's about the near future. It's not centuries in the future, but like, you know, maybe a decade or two. So it basically has its feet in the world we know today, but it takes a push at what might be existing in the technology world in a decade or so. It doesn't say years, but it's recognizably the world in which we live. And so he ruminates on what our life would be like if technology keeps accelerating like it seems to be doing and taking a bigger role in our daily lives. So it's really interesting. And there's also a couple of stories that don't have to deal with technology but seem to deal with a post maybe apocalyptic landscape where nature has sort of changed the way we behave and we're sort of building ourselves from the primal state up.
I think about that all the time.
Do you?
I think because whenever people talk about like zombie dystopia stuff, I always think like, okay, what are my skills that would that I could use after the apocalypse?
Zombie survival handbook.
Right. Well, first of all, I don't want
by Max Brooks.
That's oh yeah, right. Yeah. I have not read that. I'm in full denial. I want to go in the first wave if possible.
You mean die?
Yes. Oh. I don't want to be around to rebuild society, except having a kid messes all of that up, because that was always my plan. Now I guess I have to stick around if I possibly can. But I have no skills. I can knit you a sweater, but it will literally take me a year. That's it. My only skill.
You know, you might learn quickly. I mean, I
learn,
you know,
what quickly?
Skills. You could podcast your way out of it. I don't know.
Right.
You could do the podcast in the tundra. Well, speaking of that, I was debating whether to tell like a full story of one of his stories, and why not? I mean, there's multiple stories, at least 15 in this book. I mean, but the one that sort of impacts what we're saying is called Ice Age, and it basically seems to be the world, the United States, and I guess assuming the world got covered in ice, you know, so if you weren't at a very high elevation, you were basically buried in ice. So like, skyscrapers in New York, like the top third of them are above the ice. So people on the top floors technically might have been able to survive somehow. Or in, you know, mountainous regions in the United States, people were above that ice level. So there's all this civilization below frozen in ice.
Whoa.
And this story starts with like, you know, a family in an igloo and hunting and finding wood for fire and basically subsisting that way. And not unhappily, it seems.
How did they get out of the
building? Don't really describe that per se. I guess they were just higher elevated. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was a flood of water and then it froze, but it's like a new ice age. And then there's, of course, this one family that seems to have more people helping them. Like they had servants or a battalion of helpers before the ice age, and they're basically digging a big pit and keeping a fire burning in it to melt the ice down so they could get back down to the houses and civilization down there and therefore reap like all the stuff that's down there that might help survival above. A lot of the families in the community are upset with that because they're eating up all the wood. They're keeping this fire burning 24/7, so this family, so to get down to that lower level where all the houses are. So one of the protagonist guy that is sort of tasked with like figuring out how to handle them, and there's some people who are angry and they want to like have a vigilante and get that family to stop burning all the wood and doing that and just keep going what they're doing. And it turns out through a couple of complications that they actually end up, the whole community ends up joining that mission to melt down the ice and get all this stuff. And it ends very unexpectedly, because it ends with the author voice, protagonist, saying, as they're sort of looting, in quotes, these houses and starting to divvy up who gets what, he feels like he lost his community rather than got it back.
Oh.
And it was the author, Alexander Weinstein, writes it very beautifully, because I thought it would be like, oh, great, they have all these resources now. They have all these things again. And he sort of says, we just lost something. And then you look back and thought, they would hunt, they would play, they would build fires, they would sing songs to the kids. Again, a very sort of basic life without a lot of distraction, which he was sort of saying was the better life. There's definitely that strain through the book about, you know, what makes us human and what do we need essentially, and what else gussies it all up. The only other element I'll bring in that I think about a lot when I read these books, because there's a lot of stories that deal with technology, I mean, like virtual reality, sex, there's sex again, you know, like a married couple who basically put on a headset and a bodysuit, lie next to each other and, you know, have the deed done, but they're sort of not touching each other. So things like that come through the book all the time about how technology could impact our daily lives and our essential needs. But I always think about, as I get older especially, it's like, what's being sold to me? Like when you're younger, I feel like, or when I was younger, it was like you just accept the world and take all the resources, like I said before, you can, because you feel like you might miss out on something or might miss a resource that would make one of your dreams of love or career come to fruition. And as I get older, I realize so much of it is selling stuff. And so there's that question of like, am I buying this because I really need it, or am I buying it because you just do it? And I've talked on our Christmas episode, I talked about my mother, my poor mother, who I sort of criticize apparently as being aspirational. And she was such a classic 50s, she grew up in the 50s mom, 50s girl who then became a parent in the 70s, who would take any new technology. Like, she was the first on the block to have an answering machine. Mm. The first to try Valium. You know what I mean? Like, all these things, she just believed in technology, and she believed in the world of advertising that sold her that your life's going to be better if you try this. And, of course, as an obnoxious thinking child, I was like, you're not happier because you just took a Valium. In fact, you're a little cranky. So, you know, I always questioned that, but she just believed to the end. And, like, you know, but I saw this slightly at sea woman, you know, when those things didn't necessarily make her happy. So a book like Children of the New World.
Did you then go through and sort of reject materialism?
Yes.
Did you read all of the corresponding books that would educate you about that? And like then what? Quote them to her obnoxiously.
Oh, no. I mean, she did tell me to teach me one very valuable thing, is that she really, towards the end of her life, like, found work very meaningful. Mm. And, like, she didn't worry about, she stopped, actually, this is a change. She stopped worrying about money so much and just focused on the work. And of course, well, not of course, but the money did come. Like, sort of, and I do that at the library. Like, you know, I don't have to think about profit, but I don't think about numbers or results. Or I just sort of passionately go into what I really want to do. And then very happily, sometimes the results confirm my instincts. But anyway, so I think of that element of materialism for sure in our accelerated technological age, about all the new stuff that comes out that we sort of can't resist, but do we really need? And is it being sold to us for what reason necessarily? That makes me nervous about just buying it. Yeah. One last thing. There, when my laptop died three or four years ago, I've never gotten a new one. I have the phone. That's all I have personally. I came home the day after it died, and I literally physically had a reaction. Like, it felt like withdrawal. Oh, I think I've mentioned this before.
Not about the laptop.
I don't remember the exact feeling, but I know it was so notable that I said, this is physical withdrawal. Like, I didn't have that thing to go to flip open, turn on. And I was like, so angry. I was like, I am not getting a new one. But yet the phone, you know,
good for
a
you
computer,
for fighting it though.
But when I did, when you stop watching TV for a week, I don't remember feeling withdrawal or something. I don't know. Anyway, Children of the New World, great short stories about the not too distant future by Alexander Weinstein.
Those sound really good. What you were talking about with the burning down the ice part reminded me of Oryx and Creek. Did you ever read that? The Margaret Atwood book?
Oh, Margaret Atwood.
There's a super memorable part where something happens. We won't go into the whole plot, but something happens and these people find themselves stranded in this, like, beauty parlor sort of place where that was, like, used for aesthetic treatments for people. And they have to figure out how to make do with, like, the supplies that were there. And it's very, I don't think it's necessarily giving the same lessons about, like, community and stuff, but it definitely is making some serious commentary about materialism.
That's a great recommendation.
Yeah. And the other thing I can never forget about that book is the Chicky Knobs. Do you remember that?
What?
It's this disgusting, like, food product that they eat in the book. And Chicky Knobs. Read Oryx and Creek. You'll learn about them. It's too disgusting to talk about right now.
I read Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood and The Robber Bride.
So I love The Robber Bride.
Yeah, she's
Margaret Atwood is probably my favorite living author.
Really?
I know that's a bold statement, but I think it might be true. I love her
work
exciting. So much.
She's similar. I mean, to what I'm talking about in Alexander Weinstein's books, and I've mentioned Shirley Jackson before, not in the same sort of horror-y or dystopic future, but she takes situations that are very recognizable, like The Handmaid's Tale, like a culture of people that we can recognize, but adds an element of something that is a different, that makes the culture very, very different, and therefore you get to indulge your favorite thing, which is to imagine how you would survive in it. And The Robber Bride takes a fable.
Oh, The Robber Bride is so
and
good.
And sort of twists it a bit. So
That's also a story about friendship. I love recommending The Robber Bride to people who want to read stories about friendship, because it has this, like, incredible quality of slight magical realism, really being in a narrator's head. Like, it's a great unreliable narrator story. Oh my gosh, that might be my favorite of her books. Although Cat's Eye also is really amazing. I loved her realistic fiction. I will say I miss her realistic fiction phase.
Well, her very first book was Surfacing.
Yeah, short stories.
Yeah. We could do a whole thing on Margaret
Atwood. We could. I want to do a whole thing
definitely
on Margaret
Atwood. Definitely a must
recommend. I saw her speak a couple years ago, and she was so funny.
Yeah.
I was amazed at how funny she was. I don't know why I wasn't expecting that, but she was just totally hilarious.
Oryx and Crake, though, has been recommended to me multiple times. Yeah.
Yeah, she's really deep in the sci-fi now. Okay. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, that was a little expertise show-off you had there about all your Margaret Atwood knowledge. That's very cool.
You know how I like to show off.
You're all ego all the time.
Do you think Margaret Atwood is listening to this right now?
What?
Margaret, we love you.
She should come on our podcast. Make us blow up.
Oh my gosh. In the dystopian future when podcasting is the only thing we can do, you're invited.
You're just like a brain with a mouth at a microphone.
Do you know she actually invented and holds some kind of patent on this machine that is like a pen that you can use long distance so that she didn't have to leave her house to go sign books. So she can like broadcast herself to
Margaret Atwood?
Yeah. To a library or a bookstore or whatever kind of signing. And she like the pen is like connected to her hand somehow.
Oh.
And the pen signs remotely for her.
Is it like a mechanical thing?
Yeah.
So you see this machine arm going Margaret Atwood as she's right, like
as
in
she's,
Canada.
But she could be like to Frank.
Oh,
read Oryx and Creek. Love Margaret
she's
Atwood.
Definitely, she invented this?
Yes. I may be getting the story a teeny tiny bit wrong, but there's some truth in there somewhere. We'll look it up.
That's sort of interesting.
Yeah.
Because that's sort of
awesome. Goes, is that the word you're looking for?
Well, that's a good illustration of what I just said about this book. Like, it is sort of awesome and techno, but like the whole point of most book signings and stuff to meet the author right. and to have that connection rather than seeing this thing go, Margaret Atwood.
But if you see her on a screen at the same time, isn't that also sort
oh my
of
God.
Connecting
All
with
right.
her?
This is the issue.
Yeah.
What is needed?
I think
you just illustrate exactly what the issue of this book is, Children of the New World. It's like, what do you need in your life to make it an experience, to make have it a valuable experience? Mm-hmm. If you're so cool, like Margaret Atwood was on the screen and this mechanical hand is writing her name and she's really writing it. I love it. It's so cool. Or if you're just like, this is ridiculous. Why is she not here? I want to meet her. I want to smell her. I want her to be here.
I need to breathe the same air.
Or maybe
she's
a combination
breathing.
Of both. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it has to be a combination of both. But if what it takes for her to continue writing the way she does is to like stay home and be a total recluse and not go in public, I'm fine with that.
It's
I have
very
no problem.
Accommodating if you think about it in a certain way to her fans.
Even though I just said that I went to see her speak in front of a huge crowd and it was amazing.
Yeah.
So see? I'm being kind of hypocritical actually.
Which is not unfamiliar to me.
<Shut up.
laughs> Well, I didn't
we
know
don't have a table between us today. We're just like sitting. So now
you're
I want to
watching
like,
my,
kick you.
My legs are crossed very glamorously. Wow.
Cool.
That was fun. That's what, folks, that's what our new format's going to be. Just us sitting around talking without any fear of a guest coming on. Not that it's fearful, but
no fear, no table, no nothing. No just Gwen and Frank unfiltered.
Just two heads talking.
Except for the editing that happens a lot. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Would you like to hear about my book?
Oh, I thought, yeah, yes.
What, you thought I wasn't going to have
no,
one?
No, actually, your Margaret Atwood experience was totally extempore.
It was.
Extemporaneous.
Extemporaneous.
So, yes, I do want to hear about your book.
Okay, my book is called Camp So-and-So by Mary McCoy. We're entering the era where I'm going to start talking about young adult books for a long time now. Sorry, no, I just kicked you. That was by accident, I swear. So, Camp So-and-So by Mary McCoy. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so it's horror, which is not my genre.
For children but or YA?
YA.
Okay.
Definitely YA. Do not give this to a small child. On the other hand, the thing that it does so amazingly that I just think is so cool is that it takes all of these tropes from a lot of different kinds of books. So it takes like adventure stories and like traditional sort of page turnery plot heavy things and works them into this horror book, which then winds up being about magic kind of. And like, it's a little bit hard because I really can't talk too much about it without giving it away. But you know from the very beginning that it's sort of in a performance format. So it has like a cast of characters at the beginning of each section. And so it's divided up into five cabins. So it's five cabins of five girls each. And so there's this like cast of 25 girls who have gone to this camp. And it's set up in this great way where it's like in the darkest nights of February, these brochures went out showing this beautiful camp, and 25 girls wrote back saying, yes, we're going to come. And you know the whole time that there's this narrator who's talking to you that's like way kind of over the top, like a very heavy narrator voice saying things like, but they didn't know what would come next. Dun, dun, dun. And so you hear this narrator's voice, but then the narrator eventually becomes a character in the story in this way that you're totally not expecting. And so it's like literally setting a stage for a performance that is happening. And I can't tell you too much more.
There's a culminating literal performance by the girls in the camp. You mean?
Well, there.
Or you say performance.
Yes, on two different levels. There is like actually a performance by the girls at the camp, and then, oh, I don't know how to do it without it being a spoiler.
Oh, then don't. But like, okay. I guess I'm just preoccupied with your use of the word performance.
Yes. Like you should be. You should be. And right. That is what you should keep in mind as you're reading the book. It is so intriguing. And Mary McCoy is a librarian also. So I think that subconsciously she was like somehow pushing my librarian buttons. Maybe authors just have a sense of like, if someone has read, because what she's doing is taking these tropes and just like twisting them. And so, it, you know, the first one is this like, the girls, so let's see, I think it's cabin three.
So they each chapter's cabin by cabin.
Yes, and then it switches.
Okay.
Right. Merge, and so in the first chapter, it's these girls who are like going to have a rivalry with another camp that's across the lake. And so they're like preparing and they're going to do archery and horseback riding and like all this stuff. And then it turns out to be nothing like what you think it is. And then another cabin, you don't know any of the girls' names. And it's played as like an adventure story. So it's like, oh, I can't remember what they are now, but it's like the girl with a lot of braids and the girl, the like skinny goth girl. And so it's these archetypes
right.
of different kinds of characters that you would see in an adventure story that don't have names. Hmm. And so they go on like this quest into a cave to find something and they don't know what it is. And this monster attacks them. And then there's one where a hedge grows up. It actually really reminded me of the thing that you talked about on the last podcast where you read those essays by, what was that woman's name?
Helen Garner.
Yes. Where with the foliage that was knitting together, it was like this visceral. Thicket grows and the thicket totally envelops them. And then they have to figure out what to do to get out of it. And so it's like all these different adventure horror stories. And it's fairly gruesome, actually. About what's happening to these girls. One of them gets bitten by this like poisonous bug. Like it's, yeah.
But then it all comes together
in this
way. So they're
way.
Not just separate stories. They do work
right.
together.
Okay. Right. And you know that they're all related.
Yeah.
Because they're all at the same camp and they can physically see each other sometimes. Like they'll enter each other's stories sometimes.
Oh, I love that.
But then at the end, it all just comes together in this like magic, crazy way. It's so good. It's so good.
What is camp? Is it so S-O and S-O?
Yes, because we don't know the real name of the camp.
I'm like, this is weird.
It's super weird.
Is it existential?
Yes.
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 Like, yes.
It's so good.
It's existential.
And this is what I like most about being a member of this Best Books for Teens committee.
I'm sold on this book.
Yeah, this is a book I never would have picked up, even just based on the cover.
But you're not horror fan.
I'm not a horror fan. It's like this black, crazy cover with this like freaky crow on it. Like I never would have picked up this book. But the whole point of this thing is to read outside your comfort zone. And so I'm deliberately like kind of forced myself to read the stuff. And then you discover this, which is by an author I'd never heard of. I don't think it was published by Carol Rhoda Books or Carol Rhoda Lab, which is a pretty small publisher. I don't think they do a ton of titles. And so it was so great. So very right. far out of the mainstream.
Does
but
Brian
so
like it?
Good.
Brian's the colleague of mine that was on talking about horror movies a while ago.
I hope he reads it. Okay. I don't.
I'll have to check in.
I think I was the first person on the committee to read it, but you can bet I'm going to be pushing it into the hands of a lot of people.
Obviously.
It is out. You can go and get it at the library. The last I looked, I don't even think there were any holds on it.
Do you think
it,
a so. Teen who was like into like really scary stuff would be into it?
Yes.
Okay.
Not because it's really scary, which it is. Well, it's not scary in the way that like The Bunker Diary is scary. Mm. That's the book that I compare a lot of teen horror
to. That's true life horror.
Right. This is not true life horror. This is, and you know right
stylized.
Away. Right. Exactly. Okay. You know right away that because of the way it's stylized that something is going on. I would love to give it, like the perfect patron for a book like this is someone who has read a lot of horror, has read a lot of adventure stories and really likes them because the way that the tropes are all twisted will appeal to them so much, I think. So Camp So-and-So by Mary McCoy.
Yo. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
I wasn't like totally bored to death by your YA books.
Get ready.
I'm being so embittered. I don't feel that way. But
I actually also just finished a total YA romance, but it's not in the system yet, so I can't recommend it yet. I think it doesn't come out till July. I need to like make a note for myself to remind myself because it's great.
Right. You just had a book buzz.
Yeah.
And there's so many books that you had advanced reader's copies. Mm-hmm.
Book buzzes are when publishers come to preview their books. So we have
some. For librarians.
Yeah, we have some that are just for librarians.
And they have all these advanced reader's copies, which yes. I've looked at, and some will be out in July.
They get put in giant boxes in Frank's library waiting for
office.
Us to cut.
In like, your office. It's like taking over. We just got a whole bunch of boxes for next month.
Right. I think next month is fantasy.
Sci-fi fantasy, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's how your librarians stay up to date on new books and what they are going to read.
You know, we could do if listeners are into this, they could comment. We could, on the days that were just you and me, we could do a, one of us could guess a passage from the other, which I sort of, you know, I love that.
I know.
Whether people like me doing it or not, you can let us know. I just suddenly felt like doing that now, but we don't have anything prepared.
Can you just recite something from memory and I'll try to guess it?
No.
47 years ago.
No, I don't have anything that's memorized. And that's actually something I was thinking about when I was reading the book I just talked about, was that about trends, what's being sold to us, what's the method in which we are told to be human beings. Like, I actually just thought about education because, I ran into, at an event, despite happenstance, these three young guys who were like 19 years old. And they got, they were at a poetry event. We were actually closed, but they were wandering around the building. And I suddenly came on these three guys walking around. It was just me and this event downstairs. And then these guys like in the dark. And I was like, what's going on here? Like, hi, can I help you? And they were just like, we're just looking around. I was like, all right, it's fine. They ended up started saying, can we get cards? And we check out books. And like, they were just sort of beguiled by the library.
Was the library open?
No, we were closed. We were,
how'd they get in the
door?
We
were closed. But I did a so-called after-hours poetry reading, and they were at this poetry event. I think one of their teachers from college was one of the poets, so that's why they were there. So the poetry event was going on. They clearly just slipped away from it and were wandering the building. And I was just somewhere in the building, not at the poetry event, and just encountered them in the half-darkness of the closed library. Mm-hmm. And then we started talking, and they ended up wanting cards. One of them had a card, but the other two wanted cards because they suddenly wanted to check out books because they were poking around the library. So I was like, that's a magical moment. Like, these three young guys got library cards, but we weren't open, yet they got them anyway from this organic encounter. Mm-hmm. So as we were, as I was giving them cards, they were filling out the application, and we started talking about handwriting. And they had said, one of the guys said he was the last in his school, last class to be taught handwriting. It's not taught anymore. Yeah. And then he added, and I never use it. Uh-huh. Like, because he was writing it, and it was just like hard. Like, he needed Margaret Atwood's mechanical hand or something. But and that made me think, that's sort of when riffing off of when you said, do you have something memorized? How when I went to school, we didn't memorize long poems and long things like that, like our parents' generation might have. And I sort of wished I did, because like your parents, they can recite like Hiawatha or some poem. Right. And they sort of said they hated learning it, but that gave them so much pleasure to think of it later, to sort of like know that they had those words in their brain. And I sort of love that.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was so excited to bring up what I just brought up. It's somehow, I guess the handwriting
thing.
How it changes.
Yeah.
And how they were so insistent, the boys, about that the grades after them, the generation after them, are not being taught how to write, which I've always heard to be so.
It's hard not to have a reflexive like, oh God, that's so sad thing with that. Right. Yeah. But it is really, we have a very young colleague here who he and I were working on a project together, and he had to write things and his handwriting is atrocious. And I was like, you didn't learn this in school, did you? And he was like, no, we didn't do this in school.
Really? Like cursive?
Oh, yes. Or printing or anything. I don't know. Handwriting and spelling, they were like my two best.
Well, like I've said before, we have a big chalkboard in the lobby at Jefferson Market, and the point of it was to write a quote or a word of the day every day. And I started writing in block letters, and then I went back to script or cursive because I wanted to practice it. And the public loves it. It's like I wanted something in the lobby that showed a human connection right. rather than like a word generated
document.
Because
it's lovely to see handwriting.
Even mistakes now I enjoy. Yeah. It's just, I don't know.
I had a totally separate, I'm exhausted. This has nothing to do with handwriting at all, but I wanted to bring this up because I wanted to see what you thought about it. Did you see that Amazon is opening physical bookstores? Yeah. How do you feel about that? And one of them is kind of near Jefferson Market, right?
I think it's exciting.
You do?
But it's more about their, not, I thought it was more about their other, like, food or other things.
Food?
Yeah.
Amazon sells food in everything. Their stores?
I think they want, I
thought. Oh, I thought they were, like, old school bookstores.
I don't think so.
Both.
Okay. Because they sell a lot. And I think part of it was to sort of have something, I don't know. I read
there's one in Columbus Circle.
About it.
Yeah. And then
is
there's
it open
one,
yet?
Yeah. And then there's one opening in Midtown. And then they just announced a third location, too.
Downtown.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. I'm really curious. I really want to see what it looks like.
I do, too.
I also don't intend to spend a lot of money.
Well, I want to see what it looks. That's good. I agree with you. I want to see what it looks like to see what physical spaces are being reinvented as, like how public they are. Mm-hmm. Like, are they embedded in a sale mm-hmm. situation, like a merchandising situation? Are there public spaces? I feel like that's sort of a trend that people are hungry for public spaces. Mm-hmm. So, and anyway. Oh, boy. Okay. So, non-book rec. Do you have a non-book rec?
I do.
What is it?
It is.
Do you want me to go first?
Now or? I have two and I have to decide which one to do first. Yeah, you go first.
Well, I actually am trying to expand my horizons, sort of. When you hear the topic, you realize I'm not. But it's a podcast that I realized I enjoyed and then thought of the other day and re-listened to again and got into it. It's called You Must Remember This.
Oh, yeah.
By host Karina Longworth. Mm-hmm. She's a film critic and film writer and commentator. And it's all about, as she says, the secrets and untold or forgotten stories of Hollywood of the last century. And you know, I know so much about Hollywood and the golden age stars and stuff. Listening to her is a pleasure because she really is sort of a skeptic. Like she, clearly anyone who talks about Hollywood has is enamored of it. So there is that sort of like stars are wonderful. But then there's also that skepticism and bitterness when, you know, the legend and lore of the stars is, you know, we know they're just human. It's sort of an interesting dichotomy about loving old Hollywood because they seem so perfect and they're manufactured that way, but yet they're just people. So she walks that line between sort of like the gods and goddesses of Hollywood and also what their real lives were like, and some of them are pretty brutal. And she really, really does a good job librarian wise of finding sources and really digs, and like I said, she says she goes into it with a healthy skepticism about what's true and what's just PR. Mm-hmm. So it's You Must Remember This, a podcast hosted by Karina Longworth. It's really cool.
Great.
If you like old Hollywood and old Hollywood myths and legends, it's very cool.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. All right, pick one.
Okay, I'm going to pick the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why, which is based on a young adult novel by Jay Asher. And I loved the book way back in the day. And it is about a girl who commits suicide and then records herself on cassette tapes that she then gives to people to listen to sort of lead them through the decisions that led her to this. And it's very teen angsty in a sort of way that will scratch a teen soap opera kind of itch. But it's also really serious and really and takes young adults' feelings seriously, which I think is really important and really good. And it's a really good watch. I'm used to saying it's a really good read and using read as a noun. So I don't know what the equivalent is with something that you're watching, but, I've seen like the first episode and a half and I was really sucked into it. And the acting is actually really great by all of these like teenagers.
I read something about it, but anyone famous in it?
I think the lead girl is famous.
Oh. 13 Reasons Why. When the book came out, like...
The book is old. I think it was like a 2007 book.
But it's perpetual.
It's
still asked for.
It's really popular.
It's one of those books that really connected. The successive generation, because, you know, the teens that read it 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Now there's a new group of teens still asking for that book.
And they did something smart with the technology, too, because I suspect when he was writing it, he knew that if he was writing a book that hinged on cassette tapes as part of its plot device, that it would really need like an acknowledgement that it was already an old technology. And so like the beginning starts with this kid trying to like find a way to play these cassette tapes, and he has to like go to his dad and be like, can I borrow the old boom box? And then like it doesn't work, and he's trying to like jam a pen in it and that doesn't work, and then he has to like steal a Walkman so that he can listen to it. So I like the acknowledgement that the technology is like clearly out of date and they're still using it. And there's also something really like, you know, on top of this sad story, which also, you know, it touches on sexual assault. It touches on sort of what it means to have your reputation ruined by social media / texting / the digital world. It's serious. It's a really heavy thing. But it's so nice to see these cassette tapes as like objects also, that it just gives you a little like, oh, wow, like little frisson of...
I mean, that what you just said summed up a lot of what we talked about today, especially the book I talked about earlier, and just in terms of technology and also like this tech shaming thing. Like it's so mm-hmm. like that thing about like, you know, cassettes, like as if what we have now is so the ultimate, because you right. someone's gonna make fun of it in 10 years,
and as if what we and have now is like hate. The end, like it's the exactly. end point, like it's over now.
I don't know. Maybe it's just my particular generation. I think of that sometimes, that I mean, grew up with records, with vinyl till now, and like just maybe I just happen to be of the age span where I just happen to hit sort of that quick, like records, cassettes, CDs, mm-hmm. streaming, and you know from no internet to internet, I mean all that, like whereas like I guess our parents, you know, had records. I mean TV, I guess TV was a new thing, an outgrowth of radio. It's just interesting.
It does feel like
about
the
how
pace.
It's so accelerated. Like yeah. the book you just read about, that maybe that's the difference, the acceleration, the teen book, 13 Reasons Why. It's like the cassette was, that girl had it, but yet he was so unfamiliar just a couple of years later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
It's a never ending it's really curious to have a peek into the future for 20 years. Well, I guess you do with the book Children of the New
there
World.
There you go.
By
Way
Alexander
to bring it back.
Weinstein.
Way yeah. to bring it back. All right.
That's that.
That's that. And so...
no guest. It's just us. We're signing out. We're and so signing please up. Let us know if you right. think this is all right.
Let us know if this is too much us. It might be too much us.
So we're looking for the comments saying, never too much right. you, Gwen and Frank. Never. Uh-oh, I'm setting myself up. But thank you for listening.
Yes, thank you for listening. And please go and review us on iTunes if you have something nice to say.
Our egos are so fragile, please.
They are. It's been
Believe
a long week.
Not, they are.
It's been a really long week. It helps people find the show, and it makes us really happy to see what you have to say. You can also leave us a comment on any of the blog posts that we write about the show. You can go to nypl.org/podcast to see a full rundown of our episodes. So thank you so much for listening.
And see you next time with guests.
With guests.
Should we tell the guests?
Do we want a teaser of the guests? Yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. So it is Bayana and Robin coming from the website and Twitter account and social media extravaganza Black Girls Create. And I love their work and I'm super excited to talk to them.
I think Harry Potter is going to be involved. So
Harry Potter is so
I'll
heavily
try, I'll
involved.
I'll try to bone up.
Right. So make sure you tune in next week to listen to us embarrass Frank about his lack of Harry Potter.
I look forward to it.
Great.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.